So this is the second day of the Precepts Retreat, October 2019. So what is the Dharma before the teacher starts speaking? This wonderful, strong sitting that happens together. What sort of explanation does it need? What sort of encouragement and reinforcement does it need? Perhaps just to backtrack to yesterday, we looked a bit at form is emptiness, emptiness is form. Form is emptiness, meaning, not meaning, pointing to the unfathomable, interconnected, interwoven life that we have landed in. The unfathomable life that includes this separate self, this anxious self, this self that comes to practice. And that embodies emptiness in this particular world of form that we find ourselves. Such a beautiful sense of not being able to tie anything down in concepts or words, and yet everything being just as it is. From one perspective, of course, it sounds like complete nonsense. And maybe that's how it is. Our willingness to live with the nonsense. And we talked of the open field where we can play with emptiness and play with form, play with emptiness in the world of form. Again, these are just images and they never quite hit the point, but they can stir us, they can encourage us in some way. So back to the question, silence or words? There are a number of teaching stories about this particular point, something that concerns teachers and compilers of koan books, something that concerns students. And the kind of archetypal presentation of that is the Buddha's first sermon at Vulture Peak, where the crowds gather to hear these wise words from the new guru on the block. And he doesn't say anything. In the story, he holds up a flower, but let's just put that aside for the moment and look at the aspect of the Buddha not saying anything. And there are a number of other koans about that in the various koan collections. The first koan in the Book of Serenity is about the Buddha ascending the high seat, meaning going to give a talk. And Manjushri's there and he says something about, here's your man. And then the man gets down from the high seat, walks out. Wonderful story. So every Zen teacher's dream of having that sort of confidence. I remember, I think it's Zen Master Daigaku of Furnace Mountain saying that, One day, I'll be able to say nothing at all. I just haven't got there yet. That was endearing enough. But he went on for another 40 minutes. Which felt like 3 hours. Again, just to create the context, I think, is helpful. Context of emptiness, context of form. From looking at it, things from emptiness, as it were. And of course, we're just using words all the time, so just allow for that. Looking through the eyes of emptiness, there's really no need for any explanation of the Dharma. The Dharma does not need explaining. If it did, it wouldn't be the Dharma. It would be something else. Comparative religious studies, maybe. My own teachers, the late Sasaki Roshi, loved to say, "There's when you attain this way, there's no need for the Buddha, there's no need for Zen, there's no need for religion, no need for Jesus. A world free of Buddha and Jesus," he would say. Wonderful, wonderful. No problem. Just this does not need explanation. The words add nothing. But because the field of emptiness is not an opposite, it's not one pole of an opposite, it does not mean no teaching, or no self, or no practitioners. Sometimes just this appears as people needing to practice. So from the field of emptiness, this talk is not necessary. This retreat is not necessary. So you can get in your car and go home. Because emptiness is indeed emptiness. and not just another opposite. You can turn your car around and come back. And we'll do what we feel is helpful to us in this practice itself. In our anxiety to hear the Dharma, we turn our cars, sit down and open our ears. When we, as practitioners and as speakers alike, when we hear the Dharma, we find ourselves unspeakably moved. Sometimes we don't. That's the truth of our life. And when we encounter teachings like the stories of the Buddha ascending the seat to give a talk and then leaving without saying anything, that practicing self tries to engage with that. Sometimes it's absolutely clear. Often it just simply isn't. And then all the questions come up. Why doesn't he say anything? What does that mean? Is that correct teaching, maybe, or incorrect teaching? Maybe the Buddha didn't get it anyway. Well, why am I so stupid that I can't get this? Why can't I understand? Why can't I attain this? I hear someone speaking in that silence. I hear something being said and I can't hear it. That anxiety, which is so strong in all of us in some way or the other, in a way, that's our way in. When we can attend enough to that questioning or that anxiety or that need, when we're not completely gobbled up in it, when there's just enough space around it to see what's happening, that's our way in. Because then we can see that we are relating to that story from, let's call it, the separate self, the needy self, the practicing self. And we know then that we are looking from the wrong place. We are looking for some kind of clarity, but we are standing in this block of anxiety or separateness. And we know that we won't find the answer from there. the answer that we're looking for won't come from there, from the place that we're looking at it, because we won't be able to hear it. Our anxiety is too strong. Our need is too strong. Our sense of opposites and duality is too strong. So what those stories are doing is inviting us into the open field. Only in that open field can that story speak for itself. And then our ears are open and our eyes are open. Our whole being, our whole body is open. So, in the Buddha's silence, in the teacher's silence, in the silence, what is the Dharma? What is just this, is it, in that moment? That's what those koans are all pointing to. That's what they're inviting us to be. And then when the Buddha opens his mouth, her mouth, in this case the traditional Buddha, the volumes of teachings, libraries full, how do we respond to those? That's also just this. How do we meet those kind of teachings? Can those teachings speak to us in a way that invites us in? Are we ready to walk? Are we ready to attend? When I was looking at this this morning preparation, sitting after breakfast with my coffee, which is all the Dharma is really about, there's this wonderful story about, which is really about teaching, which I just loved. Which is kind of a sidetrack, but let's just go back for a moment. It's not very important, which probably makes it more important. The thing of this kind of, one of the professional hazards of teaching the Dharma is that one really would like to copy the Buddha and not say anything, or one would like to copy Lin Chi and he just shouted, or Dei Shun and whacking everyone over the head. That's a great temptation. Not to be sniffed at. And the books, the compilations are full of these wonderful stories. Lin Chi, it was a famous Tang Dynasty Zen master, as you will know, would shout. And at some point, all the teachers in his lineage used to shout. And it got so noisy in there that they used to impose fines on any teacher who shouted. Very clear. Collect the money. But another story of imitation, which is really this, what this diversion is about, a man called Chu Ti. And Chu Ti was famous for what they call one finger Zen. I'm sure you've read the story. When everyone asked him a question about the Dharma, he'd put up his finger. At the end of his life, he said, the Dharma is just one finger and I've never exhausted it. And he had a famous servant, who you probably also have read about, who when some visitor asked what his master's teaching was, he put up his finger. And when he related the story to Chu Ti, he told Chu Ti that he'd put up his finger, and Chu Ti cut it off with a knife. Okay, so imitation's very dangerous. Don't do it. You either get fined or you get cut in half. But one of the neat little stories about Chu Ti was that he was already an accomplished teacher and so on. And he was sitting in his hermitage one day, and a nun came to visit. And she came and said, "If you can speak, I'll take off my rain hat." And he was absolutely stumped, dumbstruck. Basically saying, "You can say, teach the Dharma, I'll take off my clothes for you." And she repeated the offer or the challenge three times, and he became increasingly dumbstruck and couldn't respond. And then she gave him one final chance and said, no, it doesn't go like this. He then, out of some desperation, said, "But I can offer you a room for the night." He's trying to save face a little bit by being generous. She said something like, if you can speak the Dharma, I'll stay forever." And he was dumbstruck again. Couldn't find the words. And according to the story, this was the turning point in his career. He realized that he didn't really have what it is to practice, and it aroused his zeal to find the Dharma. I think it was too late for the nun. I'm sure she'd left by then, but he at least had teaching career of one finger in front of him. Okay. So this morning we will be having interviews, just meeting each other in the little room by the windmill. And we'll just perhaps start to look at some of these teaching koans, these stories about teaching and about practice, and about our life. So thank you for sitting so still and for listening.